Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, and welcome to The Bay, local news to keep you rooted, and welcome to our monthly news roundup. Today, me and the whole Bay team are going to take some time to talk about the other stories that we have been following in the month of April. I'm joined by our producer, Maria Esquinca.
Hello.
And our senior editor, Alan Montecillo.
Hello.
So let's just dive right in here with Maria and a story out of Berkeley.
Yeah, so the story I'm bringing to y'all today is about a very young person, Cecilia Luna Parra, who just won the District 7 seat for Berkeley City Council. She is currently an undergraduate student. She's a senior at UC Berkeley, and she will be the youngest person serving on the council at 22 years old.
Tell us a little bit more about who Cecilia is and also who ran against her.
So she's a pretty vocal progressive socialist. She is the current president of the Cal Berkeley Democrats. She's a Latina, queer woman of color, and she ran against James Chang, who is also a student, but he's a graduate student from the Haas Business School. So some of the things she talked about was she is a supporter of affordable housing, tenant protections, investing in mental health care as a way to address public safety. She ran on a really strong opposition to building housing on People's Park. She formed a really close relation to the community around People's Park.
I moved here for the first time in January, and I was so lonely. I didn't know anybody. I had no community here, and it was the middle of COVID.
And she talked a little bit about this.
And I started seeing that People's Park had community events. They had cookouts. I was able to find a space that I loved, and I could pour all of myself into.
And she also ran advocating for Berkeley to pass a strong ceasefire resolution for Gaza.
Tell me a little more about this district. It's District 7, right? And I understand it has a lot of students in it.
Yeah, so District 7 is also known as the student district. This is also the district where People's Park is. And this district seat was formerly held by Rigel Robinson, who was also elected at the age of 22, but he stepped down from his seat in January.
Yeah, and I remember that being sort of a story in Berkeley because of why he left, right? Can you remind us why Rigel Robinson left his seat and basically left this door open for a special election in April?
He resigned from his seat because he said he was facing harassment, stalking, and threats, and part of it was related to his support for building housing at People's Park. And so, yeah, he just ended up leaving his seat and it led to a special election.
I know one other reason this race made headlines is that turnout was super low, right?
Yeah. So as of last Wednesday, Cecilia was leading with 291 votes to 197, making it a total of about 500. There's about 3,000 registered voters in District 7. So, yeah, the numbers are not great.
Yeah, pretty low. She has since declared victory. What do we know about what she hopes to do in office and how she talks about that?
When she won, she released a statement on her Instagram. She talks about how she ran an openly socialist and abolitionist campaign. And I think a big thing for her is representing student voices. She talks a lot about how student voices have been really missing from city council and have not really represented them. And so I think she really hopes to represent the things that progressive students want.
All right. Well, Maria, thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
After the break, we will talk about why Alameda County is reviewing death penalty convictions and pandas potentially coming to San Francisco. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast comes from Outdoor Supply Hardware, inviting listeners to Osh's big anniversary sale celebration, May 20th through the 26th, featuring daily deals, $15,000 in giveaways, 20% off store-wide on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot more. Learn more at osh.com.
There are true monsters in the world, people doing horrible things with impunity. Still, every once in a while, there is born a monster hunter. I'm the next Snap Judgment, The Road to Boito. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to the Bay's monthly news roundup. The next story we've got is out of Alameda County, where a federal judge has directed District Attorney Pamela Price to review all death penalty convictions for signs of prosecutorial misconduct. Our colleague and reporter Annalise Finney reported this story for KQED. Judge Vince Chabria of the U.S. District Court of Northern California basically came to the district attorney with this request after evidence showing and indicating that Alameda County prosecutors may have systematically excluded Black and Jewish jurors in cases where people were later sentenced to death row.
That seems like a pretty big deal. How did they figure out that this was happening?
So there were notes discovered in a case of a man named Ernest Dykes, who was convicted in 1995 for murder and attempted murder. Dykes is currently on death row, and his case is one that has kind of risen to the forefront because of notes in his case file, which showed prosecutors essentially taking note of potential jurors for his trial. Notes that kind of appeared to document whether the prosecutor believed that the potential juror was Jewish or not. And Price said that some of these notes also appeared to indicate a disdain for Black women. And this has led to these allegations that there was this essentially systemic attempt by prosecutors in the county to single out certain jurors from others.
The idea being these prosecutors thought Black and Jewish jurors might make it harder for me to secure a death sentence, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
So California hasn't had an execution since 2006. So I have to imagine some of these folks are on death row but still alive. So how many cases are we talking about and what could happen?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about people who have just been languishing in death row. Currently, 37 people on death row were convicted in Alameda County, including Dykes. Price's office told KQED that it is now reviewing 35 of those 37 cases. And this could actually lead to resentencing or retrials in these cases. And that's a huge deal. The review began about a month ago, so I think it'll take a while before we actually see that happening. But these allegations seem to be an open secret. And Alameda County District Attorney Pamela Price has vowed to really review them. Well, that was my story. And last but not least, Alan's got a fun story for us today.
Yeah, we're going to have a major tonal shift to something a little more fun.
Light.
Exciting news for the Bay Area, especially San Francisco. Earlier this month, Mayor Lenton Breed announced that the San Francisco Zoo will get two giant pandas, which
Yay!
Is very, very exciting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. For some reason, maybe it's this reason, I've been seeing so many pandas on my Twitter feed, and they're so clumsy and so cute.
Have either of you seen pandas before?
No.
Not in real life.
No. I've always wanted to.
I definitely did like a little report on pandas in like the second or third grade, and I was definitely obsessed for a little while.
That's adorable.
But besides the fact that Maria and I are excited, why is this such a big deal, Alan?
I mean, giant pandas are a big deal. They're, first of all, an extremely rare species at this point. There's somewhere around 2,000 wild pandas left in the whole world. Giant pandas are really only native to these sort of very specific mountainous regions in China. They're also very rare in this country. There's only 4 pandas in the United States. They're all in Atlanta. San Diego is scheduled to get 2 more later this year. So San Francisco getting 2 giant pandas is pretty significant, I would say.
So how exactly did this negotiation happen for these pandas to eventually get here to San Francisco?
So there's been some speculation for a while that getting pandas was a major priority for Mayor London Breed, even going all the way back to APEC, which was the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit hosted in San Francisco. Members of 21 countries, including many in the Asia-Pacific, came here. And there was some speculation among reporters, political watchers, that one of the goals of London Breed in meeting with Chinese officials was to see if it'd be possible to get pandas in San Francisco.
I'm here in Beijing, China, and guess what, San Franciscans? I have some really exciting news.
This announcement came on the heels of Mayor Breed's recent trip to China. So she was in China for a few weeks. She very, among many other important things like tourism, economic development, also made this very, you know, exciting announcement that, hey, we've reached an agreement.
We have some cute, cuddly, black and white beauties coming to our city. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome pandas to San Francisco!
There's no exact date yet, probably around 2025 if everything goes smoothly.
Cool. And if everything goes smoothly, how could it maybe not go so smoothly?
There's a lot that needs to happen before giant pandas arrive at the San Francisco Zoo and become available for all to see and visit. And it's all cute and exciting, and it brings tourism to the west side and to the city. It's all great. A lot of stuff has to happen first. First of all, it is very expensive to host pandas. It's going to cost an estimated $25 million to build a facility for these pandas. U.S. zoos have to pay $1 million per year to China as well as part of an annual fee. So it's going to take a minute. And currently, London Breed is trying to raise money to pay for this, including from private donors. But the other wrinkle here is San Francisco's zoo, where these pandas would be housed, might not be in great shape right now. The day before this news about pandas came out, actually, the Chronicle published a story about problems with maintaining staff, concerns over the safety of animals and guests. They even reported on an example from last May where a door was left open and a grizzly bear chased around a worker.
Oh my God.
You know, this is actually all in surveillance footage, and you know, the worker was unharmed, but there's some real concerns about the state of the San Francisco Zoo. So obviously, if and when these pandas arrive in 2025, there's a huge incentive for everyone to make sure that the zoo is in good shape. Because, not to put too fine a point on it, but these are basically like VIP guests. It's really important to the zoo and also to San Francisco's image as well that these pandas are safe and nothing bad happens to them.
Talking about San Francisco's image, something that has been a priority for London Breed, especially since she will be running for re-election, is that people speculate that this is part of her re-election campaign. What do you have to say about that?
I mean, there's different ways to think about that question. I mean, we know that London Breed's polling numbers are not great as she faces a tough re-election fight. And any candidate, including Mayor Breed, really wants to do well among Chinese voters in the city. I do think that when a mayor comes back from a foreign visit, you know, they're really trying to talk up the city. They're trying to attract tourism. They're trying to attract business. And in that way, you know, that does affect, you know, how a city is doing. I don't think getting pandas means that London Breed is going to win the Chinese vote in San Francisco. And certainly even if, you know, if and when the pandas arrive, it would be after the election anyway. But, you know, if all goes well with getting the pandas here and this zoo is great and people want to come and visit, you know, that could attract dollars and visitors to the city. And I think, you know, any mayor would see that as a good thing.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for that news. And Maria, of course, as always, thank you for joining me as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by me, Maria Esquinca, and Alan Montecilio, with music courtesy of the Audio Network. The Bay is a production of listener-supported KQED in San Francisco. Thanks so much for listening. Peace.
Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles? The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.